disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
The following subject has taken me almost 12 months to research and investigate. The subject matter has taken me down many rabbit holes and dead-end alleys of disinformation, but I have finally arrived at a point where I can share the evidence and facts that I have found with you all. There are a lot of details and moving parts to this case, so this is why this will be a multiple-part series, the entirety of which will drop over the next 3 weeks. If you enjoy what you hear and you'd like to support us, please consider heading over to patreon.com/deadsouls and donating to our research and investigations. Also, give us a follow on Instagram. Just search Dead Souls Podcast and we'll come up. Thank you. Chapter 2. Malevolence. Imagine a sheer black immorality. The darkest of unholy malevolence. A base-level need for destruction, monstrous and complete black-hearted actions and thoughts. Are evil compulsions born with us, or psychologically created in childhood or later? Perhaps through PTSD or other traumatic experience. Serial killers like Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, and Charles Manson often steal the spotlight when it comes to discussions of the worst crimes of the 20th century, and perhaps rightly so. Their actions are abhorrent to the average mind. They are the true crime rock stars whose names are carved into the stone of history. Their infamy, by virtue of their depravity, solidifies their reputation. Their actions repel most of us. Their beliefs and needs are alien to both me and you. Their rap sheets for just the three gentlemen previously mentioned account for over 60 murders, arson, child molestation, kidnapping, cannibalism, and burglary. Pretty vile. But what if I told you that these actions could just as easily be committed by you? That it wouldn't take much to convince you to take part in the same criminal activities as Manson, Bundy, or Dahmer? You, me, all of us can be fairly easily manipulated. And whilst that may sound pretty scary, it's also necessary for general function and how our social interaction works. A rough example of this is if one develops, let's call it for argument's sake, normally, then one will develop a desire to make others happy and will develop an expectation that certain actions will lead to certain responses. Through hundreds of thousands of interactions, these are then reinforced. This occurs in your early development stages as an infant and young child. You see, the principle of reciprocity is an extremely strong motivating factor. Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion, by author Robert Cialdini, goes into this in detail and gives us a number of examples. One of those is this. The principle upon giving out free product samples. The person does you a favor, let's say, by giving you a free sample of their product. This gives you an impetus to return the favor and possibly purchase the product in the future. Your rationale will tell you that you like the product as justification, but that's only part of your mind's decision. Reciprocation plays a larger influence in part. There are a number of principles like this which make for successful social interaction. This is something that is strongly built into the fabric of our being. People who understand how these motivations and trigger factors work can take advantage of them. This can form the basis of socially acceptable manipulation of those behaviors which form the foundation of many books on sales and marketing techniques, for example. But it is also possible for people to take advantage of the inclinations we develop as we learn empathy, to take advantage of the kindness and will of others. Those with a combination of nefarious needs, poor moral character, and a fear to high-level intelligence can understand human behavior to the point of total manipulation and influence. We as a species are susceptible to psychological manipulation because it is favorable for humanity that factors which encourage positive social interactions be present, which in turn creates opportunities for those factors to be taken advantage of. But there are those that are more susceptible than others to outside influence. Some are susceptible to manipulation because they are so traumatized. When we are traumatized, we are less present. We are not aware of our feelings and we have less control of those feelings. Those who can pull the emotional strings can trigger automatic emotional reactions in individuals and get them to react how they want them to. Those who feel lonely and misunderstood can be easily manipulated with promises of inclusion, care, friendship, and camaraderie. Those who are insecure can be easily manipulated by promises of fame, importance, specialness, and the feeling of being heard and appreciated. People who are scared or fearful can be easily manipulated by threats of exposition and revelation. Consequential and emotional blackmail leads to the anxiety of what if. We will accept information and follow a course of action if it satisfies our emotional needs. The more desperate we are for those emotional needs to be fulfilled, the less we are likely to think and consider before we agree with what we are being promised. The flip side to this coin is the influencer, of course. Often charismatic, friendly, relatable, intelligent, and importantly, they understand or get you. Some are well-practiced con men, individuals who have studied their behaviors at an almost art form level. Others, through a lifetime of negative developmental reinforcements, have developed those manipulative traits as their quote-unquote normal behaviors. In other words, they influence others and are manipulative in a not always positive manner without actually thinking about what they are doing. Does that make them evil by nature? The Process Church of the Final Judgment. The Process Church of the Final Judgment, or more commonly referred to as simply the Process Church or the Process, were a religious organization that emerged in early 1963. The organization was founded initially as an offshoot religion based off of Scientology. However, this belief system was quickly abandoned by the church in favor of their own faith structure. The Process Church was established in London, England, by married couple Robert de Grimston, a wealthy architect born into a Wiccan family, and Marianne McLean, a former sex worker who spent most of her teenage years living on the streets of Glasgow, Scotland. The church, or cult even, emerged in a time where an interest in the occult and esoteric beliefs and practices were at a heightened interest. Society and culture as a whole was evolving, and the new young generation was looking for something more, politically and spiritually. Whilst McLean and de Grimston met in the Church of Scientology in early 1961, they were eventually ejected from the church in 1962 and got married the following year. The elements of Scientology that the couple took with them to the Process Church were the E-meters, or the electropsychometer, and the psychological programs and practices that Scientology conducted. The E-meter was a device for displaying the electrodermal activity of a human being and is used as part of the auditing process within Scientology. The efficacy and legitimacy of the E-meter has been subject to extensive debate and is widely considered a pseudoscientific device for the most part. That aside, the process leaders quickly learned that you can achieve the same results from auditing without the meter, so abandoned it in the mid-60s. The church gained popularity in London and other parts of the UK fairly quickly, and the United Kingdom press playfully referred to them as the Mindbenders of Mayfair, a joke in reference to where their main headquarters were located, in Balfour Place, Mayfair, London, a particularly wealthy part of the city, close to Mount Stuart Gardens. Their headquarters was a Grade II listed building, a mansion built in the Victorian era of uniquely Flemish and Renaissance design. The building contained a cinema, restaurant, and a popular basement coffee shop called Satan's Hollow. The top floor was reserved for priests and senior church members who conducted their rituals and ceremonies there. The Process Church was initially a psychological organization who aimed to rise above society and not settle for the status quo. They challenged normalcy and were a very secretive organization who maintained a self-contained and discreet existence. They wore tight black jeans and black Chelsea boots, a black turtleneck with black or purple cowls or capes. The men often sported goatee beards and long black hair. They wore large silver inverted crosses around their necks, or silver chains with the four P's of the Process logo. Whilst the hippies and heads dressed in bright flowing colours at the time, the Process wore all black, standing out intimidatingly from the crowd. They struck fear into others. The public said they looked like devils and had an aura of evil about them. The members of the church, as a result of its methods, rituals and techniques, were left with a disposition which was distant and said to be spacey. They would often stare at you, almost through or into you, into your eyes while speaking with you, giving slow and considered replies, rarely blinking, never smiling, designed to inflict fear and discomfort. The process of membership and ritual was said to leave members emotionless and almost robotic in their temperament. The press and public stated that the members were brainwashed, something that the members didn't challenge and even agreed with. A number of church members, including Timothy Wiley, known inside the church as Father Meeker, stated that it was willful brainwashing. Additionally, its members kept many Alsatian or German Shepherd dogs, for reasons which would later become apparent. By late 1966, the Process Church was given instruction from De Grimston to publish a monthly magazine, something that could raise funds but also attract additional followers and members. The magazine was sold by mail order and by the church members themselves directly to the public. In the UK alone, the Process sold more than 200,000 copies of their magazine each month. The magazines informed its readers of the coming end of days and contained articles of esoteric belief and rituals, magic, sex, death, crystal skulls, drugs, violence, anarchy, and the popular game at the time, at least in their circles, the game of rape, and various other extreme and taboo subjects. De Grimston also instructed the members to particularly target the wealthy young people of England and encourage them to donate their fortunes and life and join the church, and many, many did, giving up everything for a peculiar existence of ritual and oncoming annihilation. Along with the rich and powerful came a number of celebrities who took an interest in the church, Mick Jagger and Marianne Faithfull, John Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas, filmmakers Roman Polanski, Dennis Hopper and Jack Nicholson, the Beatles manager Brian Epstein and Monkees member Mickey Dolenz. The drab, grey culture of the time would often push young people towards such free-thinking cults, and the Process attracted the rich, celebrities and the young and disillusioned alike. Alex Saunders, a British warlock associated with the Process, also admitted that Sharon Tate was inaugurated into witchcraft and occultism in London around February 1969, roughly 6 months before her murder at the hands of the Manson family. In mid-1966, the group relocated briefly to Extul in the Yucatan Peninsula, Mexico. The group felt that the UK didn't want them around anymore, judging by the growing amount of negative press that they were receiving at the time. Additionally enough, wealthy members had joined their organisation and donated the entirety of their bank accounts, so that the Process would find themselves in a very privileged position. Initially, the leadership wanted to buy a private island in the Caribbean, However, they couldn't find anyone willing to sell one that they could rule over and not be a part of another nation's territory. The members meditated, prayed, and they all received messages from higher powers to head to Extol. It was there that the group transformed from a cult based on psychology and with a structure that involved development of the mind to a spiritual cult. This occurred when the members, with the aid of many narcotics, decided to meditate as a group to find what lays ahead for their group. They each shared the same vision. A vision of translucent beings appeared to each of them and gave them spiritual direction and instruction. The Process Church of the Final Judgment took its next step into spiritual and supernatural superiority. The cult returned to London in October 1966, following the destruction of their Extol home by Hurricane Inez. The members saw the hurricane and their survival as a sign. It was a sign from the translucent beings that the purpose and spiritual message was for the process to spread the word to mankind that the end times were coming. Christ, Jehovah, Satan, and Lucifer were the four gods of the universe that the cult gave its prayers and loyalties to. The process felt that if Christ and Jehovah were about forgiveness, then that should include fallen angels like Lucifer and Satan too. And when that forgiveness and reunification happens, the world will come to an end. The process now saw it as their mission to bring this about. In 1968, the process expanded across the pond and opened locations in the United States. First San Francisco, then creating further branches in New Orleans, Chicago, Miami, Boston, Los Angeles, and New York. By 1970, the church boasted numbers of over 2,000 members who followed and practiced their religion. Whilst many hippie groups at the time were looking to start the idyllic new society, the Process Church was focused on destruction and the end of all society. A welcome ritual that the church conducted, including banging on tin bells and chanting doom, death, destruction, repeatedly, before entire evenings of self-flagellation with knotted rope, mass orgies and significant and continued drug use to maintain their elevated consciousness would follow. Following the initial welcome evening, a day initiation would include multiple truth-gazing sessions. Here would be two members of the church, both old and new, who would face each other very closely in silence, their faces just inches apart. Both parties would be encouraged to tell each other everything that they think of them, voicing all of their honest thoughts to the other person. This was seen to challenge societal behaviors, being the opposite of Western manners and cultural norms. This act in repetition would break down the new members' self-vision and cultural habits and begin to restructure them from the ground up. Additionally, weekly black mass ceremonies included the congregation consuming the semen of the priest, bloodletting of a virginal sacrifice, followed by the priest performing cunnilingus on the sacrifice while the congregation chanted repeatedly. As soon as the cult settled on the shores of the United States and the continual flow of drugs maintained their elevated consciousness, the church descended into darker territory, both spiritually and physically. The four deities of the Process Church made up the totality of God, and with totality would come the end of the world. Whilst Robert de Grimston was seen as a poster boy Christ-like leader who was considered an angelic, wise man in the church, it was actually Marianne who actually controlled the church and its direction. Members would do anything she commanded via Robert, as she was rarely seen by anyone other than its highest priests. Members would call her their goddess, a goddess who lived in the shadows. Members have said that she could look at you and read your mind, that upon first meeting you, she could know all of your problems and deal with your life solution. Members of the church praised her with changing their lives for the positive. So, as you can imagine, with regular orgies, drugs, and a communal lifestyle, there would invariably be children born to the female members of the church. The children would be taken from their parents and raised communally. None of the members were interested in raising them, seeing a child as just an obstacle in appeasing their four gods, a preventative in their end of times mission. Thus the children were for the most part neglected and ignored within the church. I can confirm through research and in speaking to a number of ex-church members that all children born into the cult, that's all children, have since grown to lead very troubling lives and live in frail states. Suicide has also sadly been prevalent in their history, as well as numerous instances of institutionalization. The Process Church quickly became known as a form of Satanism, and it was. Satan and Lucifer were two of their lords and spiritual leaders. Members took instruction and value from their teachings. Members communicated directly with them, as well as Jehovah and Christ, receiving daily guidance in preparation for the ultimate destruction. Things then started to change for the church in 1970. Following the Manson family murders and the subsequent media coverage of Manson's trial and comments by lead prosecutor Vincent Bugliosi, the Process were labeled by many as co-conspirators with Manson. The church, however, strongly denied it. Even though their denials were vehement, the Process did actually visit Manson in jail on multiple occasions and even published articles written by him in their monthly magazine. Manson, in a 1971 interview, referred to Robert de Grimston as his brother. Further, it's known from multiple sources that members of the Manson family, including Charles Manson himself, spent a New Year's Eve party in 1968 at John Phillips' house. John Phillips, who was also a dabbler, shall we say, with the Process Church, had also invited members of the church to the same party, including de Grimston, McLean, and a number of senior priests within the cult. Two further links between the Process Church and Manson were that in the summer of 1967, when Manson was living in San Francisco, following his initial release from prison, he is said to have lived just two doors away from the Process Church's US headquarters, and multiple eyewitnesses have since come forward to say that they saw Manson on many occasions with members of the Process Church at and inside their HQ. Secondly, Bruce Davis of the Manson family spent several weeks in London staying with the Process Church just 8 months before the Manson family murders. Evidence from the Los Angeles Police Department shows this. Whilst both of these don't necessarily evidence that the Manson family were members of the Process Church, it does lend credence to the claims that Manson himself used methods and rituals taken directly from the Process, and that some of his methods may have been developed with the assistance or shared knowledge of the Process cult members. Another interesting fact that you can choose to interpret how you wish here is that Rosemary LaBianca, one of the victims of the second night of the Manson family murders in August 1969, was a suspected LSD dealer, according to LAPD files. In late July 1969, just a few weeks before Rosemary and Lino LaBianca would be slaughtered by the Manson family, a valuable coin collection was stolen from the LaBiancas' house. It was suspected that they were taken as part of the Manson family's infamous creepy crawls. What's interesting is that the coins ended up at a house on Waverly Drive in the hands of a man who fled his home days later for reasons unknown. The man fled to reside with friends in London whom he would sell the coins to. The location he stayed at and the people he sold the coins to were the Process Church of the Final Judgment. Strange coincidence, right? There have been many claims and counterclaims to Manson's links to the Process Church over the years, and there is significant more information and detail that I could go into at this juncture, but my purpose here is not to confirm to you, or confirm to you otherwise, of Manson's involvement in the Process Church. That information is easily researchable online, however, and I encourage those who are interested in said Manson links to dig into the subject themselves. Although beware, it's a pretty unforgiving rabbit hole. Would the church's reputation being permanently damaged by the links to the Manson family in the early 1970s, and with more and more details emerging about the practices of the cult, the church was under significant pressure from the media and public to justify their beliefs and actions. Members of the church attempted to explain their views on television and radio, with little sympathy and significant resistance from the public, however. The church's links to the Manson family would cause damage that it would never recover from. In 1974, McLean and de Grimston separated after their marriage broke down. De Grimston wished for the Process Church to continue in an even more satanic direction, whilst McLean wished to move towards Christianity. This drove a wedge between the two. De Grimston's efforts in continuing the process slowed, and with the damage done by media stories, the church eventually dwindled and ceased altogether in 1979. Offshoot chapters and subsect chapters kept going unofficially over the decades that followed. It is not known if they operated as one or independently, given that they could no longer operate in the light. All of the remaining groups, however, would continue developing and evolving their belief structures and practices. By the time the Process Church of the Final Judgment fractured, its practices and rituals included ritual killings, animal sacrifice, and bizarre satanic ceremonies aimed to bring about the end of the world. They had significant and well-evidenced links to the Ordo Templi Orientis, the Church of Satan, and a number of criminal cults and organizations. What happens when those fractured cults continue to evolve their practices to new significant evolutionary and spiritual steps? What if the bloodlettings, flagellation, animal torture, and sacrificial killings progress to a further heightened satanic ritual? Are these cults still in underground existence? In the next episode.
Believe me, if I started murdering people, there'd be none of you left.
Whether a Satan exists is a matter of belief. But we are certain that Satanism exists. To some, it's a religion. To others, it's the practice of evil in the devil's name. It exists, and it's flourishing.
In a neighborhood of the Bronx called Pelham Bay, and in Forest Hills near the famous tennis club, the killer has struck 6 times since last summer, and 5 are dead. Most of them pretty young women, shot at close range on the sidewalk or in parked cars.
Until then, my friends.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. Visit deathcult.com for more information on how you can help us and support our broadcasts. There you can also find links to our socials, Patreon, and episodes. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.